This is the one with the Torchwood Tower.
Clapping yuppies.
A giant Malteser of Doom.
And not Martha Jones.
But Ghostwatch.
It's called Army of Ghosts.
Here we go.
We're still on our endless voyage, all through time and all through space.
With Levine and Angels now, Dalek, Cyber, Zandun, wow.
Ben and Smith and Eccleston, Gallifrey, where it all began.
Doctor Who is cool again, that was Russell's master plan.
Who back when? Reviewing all new Who there is. Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Rose and Donna, Amy Pond, Rory, Martha and beyond. Join us on this odyssey, what other choice could there be than who back when? Who Back When.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode N026 of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin.
Yes, I am.
And joining me tonight are, to my right...
Nicolelli, how you doing?
Hello. To your right...
Drew Back When.
Hello, Drewmeister. Tonight, we are reviewing...
Army of Ghosts!
Very, very scary. Which is part one of a double feature. Part two is called what?
Doomsday.
But we are only reviewing the first one.
Yes, because, well, that's all we've seen.
Shall we just jump into a B-Scout? Doc and Rose decide to pay dear old mum, Jackie, a surprise visit, only to find that she's already expecting company. Namely, a disparate shape of a humanoid, or as we like to call it, or as Nick likes to call it, Groundiod.
That's absolutely not what I like to call it. Turns out, ghosts are popping into our dimension on a daily basis, and everyone around the world is super chuffed. The Doc has his doubts, though.
Enter Torchwood, led by the manifestation of every HR stooge ever, attempting to harness the power of a parallel dimension for the might of the British Empire.
B-Scout over, you are welcome.
Super tight episode, guys.
Should we maybe add a little disclaimer and say that the forces of nature have been against us in recording this? We have had neighbours' fire alarms going off.
Bells.
Church
like
bells.
Notre Dame-esque bells.
Yeah. From an ancient tradition that is hundreds of years out of date for a time zone that no longer exists.
Also, we watched the trailer for M. Night Shyamalan's Happening. That's put us off kilter. I'm not sure that anyone can create anything anymore now.
I'm too fucking scared. Yeah. There are trees everywhere.
Yeah, I know.
Everywhere. Anyway, let's focus on this happening.
Yeah. So, start us off, Drew.
Planet Earth. Just testing the levels there. Some chav on a bus says she was born and died on Earth like every other fucking human being ever. But hey, let's cut her some slack. Apparently she died. And that's how this episode begins.
This is a solipsistic prologue, yes.
So yeah, you get the two doctors Rose has known. Eccleston is looking enthusiastic and Tennant's doing a little disco dance in the TARDIS. And there are some flying screaming stingrays. And unlike the end of the last episode, where Rose is like, oh, I'm so happy. And Doc's like, you shouldn't be, everything's awful. Now they're just happy and smiley again. So I guess we're all right, right?
Apparently so. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. That's a really good point. What happened between the end of the last episode and the start of this one? Something like that just charged, supercharged their optimism.
I think probably just pointless delusion. Because, I mean, he's like 800 years old or whatever, or however old he is in years. He's endlessly old and he's absolutely always aware that forever doesn't really mean forever, certainly for his companions. So it's just delusion, right? It must be.
Delusion or the service of the plot.
Yeah. Actually, that kind of rings very, very appropriately for what happens next in this episode.
Yeah, 100%. Also, it's weird that Rose is 19.
Is she still 19?
That's what it says in the prologue. My first 19 years of my life passed without any...
Well, I just mean she was 19 when...
Exactly. She was 19 when Eccleston...
So how... So what's she now, then?
21, maybe?
Yeah,
it's
probably.
The end of the second year.
And he's 902.
Age doesn't mean anything.
Age doesn't mean anything. Give or take a few... 800.
He's only
You've
one
seen Twilight,
year.
Right?
This doctor's been in existence for less than a year. She is cradle-snatching. Or trying...
Alright, okay, fair enough.
Alright, whatever.
So,
so yeah, Rose finishes her doom-laden prologue, and we are primed for a whole heap of misery.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden, in the most jovial manner, they pop into Jackie's kitchen.
So yeah, impromptu visit, back to see the folks, you know, check in, do some laundry.
Yeah, she never gets any visitors, let's stop by.
And she is, like, incredibly grateful, which is awesome. It's a touching scene, I like it.
But not just that, she is totally getting visitors. Like, she's expecting a visitor right then and there.
Which is, actually, I think the first time watching, maybe less so this time for the review, but I remember the first time thinking, this is going to go somewhere awesome. This is the creepiest thing. It's like, granddad's dead. He's been dead for 10 years. But, you know, he's popping around for D. So it's either Jackie has genuinely lost the plot, or some way better stuff is about to happen than what actually happens in this episode. was what I was thinking at the time.
Right.
I kind of like the idea, the whole Cyberman thing. I kind of like that idea. What really pisses me off is that Jackie and the rest of the world believe these creatures to be ghosts.
Well, see, I think that the clever thing about that is the terrible, terrible set of emotions that thing might play. It's almost like, so what ends up, not to be entirely spoily for this review, what ends up being the Cybermen that are these ghosts, they're preying on the idea that people have lost loved ones and whatever. And
are they actually doing that, though? I don't think they are.
Well, no, I don't think so, but I think the writing is to do, what we're trying to say is that
I think Torchwood are preying on that idea.
Oh yeah, well then fine. That's fine as a point as well. But what I'm saying is that the tough part about watching it, or like that could come, that
is
from
that
the writing,
so many hearts are going
to
be broken.
Absolutely. But they never do anything about that in the fucking writing. And it's, I mean, we'll get to that.
Yeah,
I guess,
but also like, people aren't that naive. Like, you can't say that the whole world is that naive.
Well, I don't know, but it's not so much, it's not entirely about naivety, is it? Or naivete. It's about, which, you know, sort of delusion kind of comes from, or at least, you know, certainly in these sort of grief-stricken delusion, can come from a sense that it overrides your rationality. There's a whole sense of delusion. These people aren't naive. Their grief is overriding their normal reason engine.
Super
interesting. But this fucking episode doesn't do anything about that.
They're also dealing with an unprecedented event, and it's the least bad explanation available.
It is the least bad
from the cultural repository, is that these are ghosts.
Now, we'll put a pin in this real quick, but there is a Torchwood series.
Yeah.
About, with the one where no one dies.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Explores
this
a bit more. That's the only series I've watched in the entire Torchwood in the entire, and it was really good. And it touched on that, like, what do we do when people don't die? You know, these people should die. They're
children of Earth, I want to
very
say.
Very possibly.
Bing bong, future bonking here. It's actually called Miracle Day. It was, to date anyway, the final season of Torchwood. Children of Earth is the one where aliens turn up and I think they sort of want to freebase kids or something. Anyway, whatever. Back to the show.
So they're supposed to die, but we don't, you know.
Yeah, no one dies.
So it's kind of, again, exploring those sort of same feelings of we may or may not have these people back for various reasons, and it's complicated. But yeah, they dangle this out in front of me and then snatch you back. I feel like it's like, oh, we got the ghost and Jackie's going crazy, granddad's back, and then it's like, nah.
Well, we're jumping ahead in the episode, but where are they supposed to go with it when an army of metal men turn up and everybody's plunged into instant terror? They kind of like, oh no, this isn't what I wanted.
Yeah.
It's like, fuck my life!
I know, but I feel like it could have been, I feel like there's complexity there that they probably may have written into like an original set of storyboards and then taken out. I don't know. Or maybe I'm giving them too much credit.
I think the second the Cybermen turn up, it's just like, all right, well, let's try to stay alive.
Everyone forgets about this whole implausible backstory. Not
from the actual point of the universe, but from the point of the writing. When they sat down to write it, there were some complex themes and fun stuff to get into there that they were just like, do you want? No, screw it.
Yeah, I don't think they ever
straight into robots.
I don't think that was even part of a first draft.
It might have been, but I think you can pick the concrete details apart enough rather than having to resort to hypotheticals.
Let's get into
what happens next?
Yeah, what does
something materializes in the kitchen.
Yeah, but he doesn't want a cup of tea, and I don't see how he could pick one up, but Jackie's making one for him anyway. But okay. And so the Doc and Rose go outside, and three kids are throwing a basketball around without ever bouncing it, because that's how kids play basketball.
Maybe it's the local netball team. Maybe netball's really big in 2012, timeline we are in now.
My mistake. I retract my last remark.
And there are tons of ghosts all over the place.
Tons of.
Yeah. But only for a couple of minutes.
And right from the start, this is where I was saying, like, oh, this, what you were saying before, like, to the Doctor, there is nothing eternal. Everything is finite. Everything has an end.
Mm.
He immediately disparages the idea that these are ghosts. These are people returned from the afterlife.
Sure. Which he was weird, because a couple of episodes ago, he was fully willing to entertain the idea of a Satan.
Well, he was confronted with a Satan.
Well, absolutely. But, on the face of it, confronted with ghosts. He doesn't, like, go, well, maybe there's a parallel, that maybe ghosts are actually a thing. He doesn't do any of that. He's just like, nah, stupid, innit?
yeah.
His inquisitive mind goes out the fucking window.
The Satan thing is, at least so far, is the closest to something mythological that we've encountered in Who. But in prior Who Back When episodes, we've touched upon this fact that there is no such thing as mythology or fantasy. There's nothing like religion or anything of that sort in Doctor Who. Everything has a rational, well, quote-unquote rational science fiction or scientific explanation.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah,
this
no,
cannot
no.
be the afterlife, because an afterlife kind of suggests religion.
Well, you say that.
There must be, like, you can measure it.
Absolutely, you say that, but then he's always gone for mythology and things like wandering gods and whatever it is as a semantic field for these phenomena. So, whilst
I disagree with that. People refer to him as a god, but that's because they're not Time Lords and they view him as
well,
something...
Well, not to go all Exhibit A on you, but literally a few, like, 10 minutes or 15 minutes into this episode, he refers to the void as hell.
Yes,
some people know it as hell.
This is what I'm saying.
Exactly. The semantic field of mythology to term and name things that he knows the sign.
Can that not just be like,
but surely that
I'm trying to explain to this mere mortal what, like this regular human person, what the space between dimensions is
absolutely,
like.
Absolutely, that's fine.
She doesn't get it.
That,
I'm going to put it in simplistic terms.
Why can't that also apply for ghosts?
Wait, it doesn't in this episode.
What do you mean?
It doesn't. He, from the very start, I mean, he could very well just go like, well, whatever inhabits the space between dimensions, well, some people know that
I mean, he first encounters the ghost before he was the void ship, and he looks at them and says, nah, this is all stupid, rather than, maybe there's something to this that you're all perceiving as ghosts, and maybe this is what ghosts are, quote unquote. There's something behind it that you're all using the term of ghosts as. He's just like, nah, this is stupid. Just flat out completely rejects the idea. It rejects the semantics as well as the fucking concept.
Yeah, I think there's more to that than it being about there being no mythology per se, although that does come up when Jackie says, oh, Doctor, you're spoiling it. Wouldn't it be nice? And he goes, no, it'd be horrific. But later on, when he's talking about them, and we're getting way into the episode, but firing a pulse of energy at the wall where reality is breaking apart, three episodes earlier, he was like, oh, you humans, you're going to the ends of the universe.
Yeah, exactly.
You're completely mental, and I love you for it. And now he's like, you fucking idiot.
Yeah, exactly. Don't take any risks. Stay in your very comfortable version of reality.
But I think that's more for the service of setting up all the foreboding that this season-ending two-parter would call for.
Yeah, yeah. But he's got that slight MPD about him as a doctor. He's either nurturing father or disciplinarian, isn't he? He's either like, oh, you sprained your knee and you've got your, you know, humanity, or don't ever fucking do that again because I said so. Well, that's why. And he's one of the two sometimes.
Because this universe is my universe and you'll obey my rules.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's say we're out of the kitchen.
Let's
now.
Do that.
We're out of the kitchen and Granddad's come and gone for tea and we're off on a hunt for why these ghosts.
Do we also, at this point, I mean, I don't really remember, but I think that at this point we skip the hunt and we cut to talk.
We get a glimpse of Torchwood.
Oh, yes. Martha, not Martha.
Yeah, exactly. So, what's her name? What's the...
I want to say
name?
Anubis. No.
What is
Prima
her name?
Eggman.
Yes.
That's her name. But she's... in the episode, she's called Anubis.
Yeah. Or something.
Yeah.
Anansi?
Adoade?
Adoade? Is that even a thing?
Apparently not.
I'm just bombing it.
Bing bong, adiola.
Thanks, Fonkin. Anyway, bloody blah.
She now works... Well, she plays some stooge working at Torchwood, which is like this super corporate environment.
Yes.
And where they are very clearly responsible for these weird ghost shifts or whatever they're calling them.
Mm-hmm. Because there are two big levers.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Huge levers.
The most ridiculous contraption. Like, oh yeah, we don't. So we have computers, but we also need some sort of steam-powered lever.
Yeah, no hydraulics, but loads of computers.
I don't... absolutely makes no mechanical sense to me why you would need levers. Even if you need levers, surely there is some other mechanism that you might, like a button.
Yeah, they are also, later on in the episode, typing. They're using a keyboard to control the lever.
So,
yeah.
So like, why do you need it?
Pointless.
You don't need it at all. It's there to manipulate the masses.
It looks good, though. Something big and heavy is going down.
So anyway, Martha, not Martha. What are we going to call her now? Anubis?
Anubis.
Sorry, guys. It's Anubis. Hey, he's having a fling with office workmate Gareth.
Yeah, the world's slowest IM chat.
Yes.
With the weirdest doubled up instant deleting windows. Have they never seen MSN Messenger?
Terrible.
Which was a
real
bad time.
Yeah. So they sneak off for some implied rumpy bumpy, which you think if you're going to pop up messenger, you do the emoticon for a dick, wouldn't you? It's like a couple of equal signs and a D and no.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, you just send the zucchini emoticon. The
zucchini,
right?
And yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, that's the
or the two easier. Hands, the, you know.
Oh, yeah, that one.
Finger inside ring made of additional fingers. Whatever.
They just sort of sneak off and...
But also it's an insinuated that it's been going on for a while and everyone in the office knows about it, but still they need to have like a fairly elaborate conversation over text about
this. Do you know
this.
Maybe it works? Because I don't know, maybe I watched this much younger when I less versed in the office etiquette. But everyone was like, everyone thinks we don't know. It's like, it's still fucking weird now you know, and you don't pop them to one side and go, right, it's great that you're seeing each other, but try not to fuck in the office. Like, yeah. Why is that a thing that we're all cool with, we're all implicit with, and that's fine? You just sneak off and have a quickie and then come back to work. As long as... Everyone cool with that? Right?
Anyway, they pop off into a room that seems like it's under construction. It's just randomly full of tarpauling.
And do you know what? Everyone in the episode says, oh, yeah, it's just building work. But no one can tell you what the fucking building work is. No one's like, oh, yeah, yeah, IT are moving in down here on this floor. No one says what they're just like.
And also, there are no workmen. There's just
there,
like
there are a couple.
There are two. Oh, sorry.
Says, what if the workmen are like, nah, that's why it's safe. And then
how did they not notice that there's a goddamn Cyberman in there?
Well, see, what's worse? What's worse is that he pops off into the marquee of tarpauling.
Yeah.
Fino, his implied rumpy bumpy. And she's on the sort of fringes, and then these workmen turn up. He's like, why have you gone in without her? Have you gone in to just get rid, like, just a proper nude up and just, like, lie there, like,
oh,
Winslet?
No, he's doing the helicopter.
He's just doing the helicopter.
Yeah,
just getting
he's
ready.
He's
warming up.
Yeah, yeah. He wants to get some blood flowing into his nethers.
Yeah, fair. I get that. Understand.
Works.
Making a toga.
It's a cold corporate environment. You need all the stimuli you can get.
I do not understand that whole scene. But anyway, she goes off.
And then again,
he's cybered and she's cybered.
Yeah, so now they're wearing the same things.
It takes a while, though. You're skipping over several minutes of... I feel like this has been done to death, pardon the pun. But where she's going, like everyone else before her, stop it, no, this isn't funny anymore. I'm turning back. No, you're not. No, this time I'm really turning back. Come on now, stop being a joke. Oh, hello, are you the bloke I was looking for?
I'm so creeped out right now. That weird retelling. So creepy. Trying to do it.
Like, I'm looking at you, we're in my living room, but I'm looking at you and behind you and all around you, I just see a dark alley.
Shit. Okay. Well, at the end of it is a Cyberman.
Why are you
still
wearing a trench coat?
At the end of it. Yeah. I'm helicoptering under here. That's what you can't see. That's why it's so baggy. Loose fitting.
Still, it's an upsetting and poorly acted scene, I think.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. Also, the reveal is too early. This is like, here's a Cyberman. It's like, why can't they not disappear into top warning together? And then you just heard screams and metal and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, or even nothing.
They do that later on fairly effectively.
Yeah. Why do we have, like, now we know. Now we know. You've got your M. Night Shyamalan trick out too early.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They've got another one.
Oh, that is true. That is true.
Another one.
But, like, I mean, and through the top warning, even though we don't actually get to see the Cyberman properly, we get to see the outline of one. It's already very clear what's happening. And when they return to their desks, we have, I mean, it's a missed opportunity. They show up and they have the two Bluetooth things, just like in the whatever it was called, the Parallel Dimension episode. Which, by the way, Rise of the Cybermen and Age of Steel, which I seriously want to pin to in a little bit. But that could have been the hint of what was going on. They could have just disappeared, come back and been like just total robots. And since everyone knows what's happening, like that they have a secret relationship, they could have just gone like, oh, maybe you couldn't get it up, or maybe they just had a fight or whatever. Like, they're acting kind of strangely.
This episode doesn't deal with hints. It deals with long...
Here's in your face.
Yes,
yeah.
Close-ups.
Someone walks up and just
a
slaps a dick in your face.
Yeah,
great.
Whips out with a long, hard misdirection.
Is that what you call your dick? Why is your dick a miss? Anyway... Okay, so they turn up, they've now been cybered, blah, 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 or sort of cybered.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're excessively formal. Yvonne, I will now return to my desk and continue with my work. She didn't think anything was amiss.
Humans, nothing weird is going on. She totally just blew me.
That's so much like, that's so much like working at my work. Every day. Anyway.
I have just climaxed, but I'm afraid it has worn off entirely. It was disappointing.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, there's a parallel set of scenes going on where the Doc and Rose are learning all about the ghost phenomenon.
Oh yes, with their traffic cones. They've got
No, it's way before this. They're watching a series of shows learning how the world.
Oh yes,
all right.
Do you know what? Again, what's terrible about that scene is that A, there's loads of, just like in Fear Her, BBC product tie-in. Fuck loads of it. Specifically with EastEnders and to our...
Is that the pub scene?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So that's an EastEnders scene.
I assume that was like...
That's our Barbara Windsor real. Who played... Peggy Mitchell. And it's a long-running soap here in England.
Still is.
Longest running?
No. Coronation Street.
But still a lot. Like, ever since I've been alive.
So it's
like,
the BBC's flagship soap.
So the product tie-in upsets me like it did with Fear Her.
It was a little fairer though because there was a Trisha segment and I think Trisha used to be on ITV, didn't she? I married a ghost, but I love him anyways.
Yeah. Oh, is that? Oh, the Ricky Lake-esque show.
Yeah.
Right. That was a real show.
I assumed all of them were BBC shows.
But the thing that bothered me most, though, were the BBC sort of tie-ins, the product tie-ins. Well, like, even now, I don't think I have, like, if I just flicked up and down through all of my channels, have one channel for every country in the world. I'm just like, oh, what's happening in the Taj Mahal? Oh, what's happening in Tokyo? That's not how my programming schedule works at all.
No, but that's TV in... Okay, I think that's an actual trope. That happens not just in Doctor Who, that happens in so many shows.
Absolutely, and it winds me up that they
Someone
weren't.
Should make a stand.
Global exposition by exhibiting 10 seconds of TV.
Well, see, what would have been better, and other places do, like zombie films do.
Rick and Morty does it.
Is that where they watch a newscast, and the newscast takes them around the world. Whereas they were literally just flicking, like, oh, Japan thinks this. Oh, right, Finland reckons this.
Okay, yes, that would have been better, but I think the standard trope is every single channel is actually a different newscast from a different part of the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's all bullshit. Basically.
Yeah, yeah, oh, it's all
very bullshit. Upset. As a trope, I'm upset by it, and the fact that they couldn't have worked out. It would have been fine if it was just five different British broadcastings.
Fine.
You know, it's fucking upset. Anyway, moving on.
Whatever.
Yeah, I thought it was weird that they ended on Japan. I think Doctor Who has done that since then as well. I think they did it in the most recent episode, in fact.
Oh, really?
Or a more recent one where Japan seems to represent the exotic furthest extent of
news channels. It's slightly
racist,
isn't it?
Definitely the Japanese...
Is it what's the opposite of English? Oh, Japanese.
And the Japanese representation were like fangirls, you know, peace sign. It's like, you realise they're super complicated... They've got fucking news. It's not just random people cosplaying constantly as ghosts and whatever. A lot of people doing a lot of fucking stuff.
Could have been some really interesting porn. Ghost porn. Okay, that's what we're Googling when we
totally
press stop on this recording.
Jackie totally has 50 porn channels programmed into her.
Obviously, she's the randiest person on this show.
Exactly.
Okay, whatever. So it's been established they are super normalized in society. Everyone thinks they're ghosts, yada yada yada. Doc's now going to disprove the world.
Yeah, so that's when he gets his traffic cones.
Yeah.
No, there's... Well, yes. No, you're right. Rose leaps into the TARDIS saying they've elected a ghost as an MP for Leeds, which is notable in the news at the moment for being the UK epicentre of an outbreak of super gonorrhea. I just wanted to date this episode because that is a true disgusting fact.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Well done, Leeds.
It's okay if I touch myself, right?
I'm really glad you have notes.
Well done, Drew.
So yeah, triangulation time.
Okay, so they've got this special traffic cones.
I'm going to interrupt you again.
Oh, please.
Because as the Doctor is getting his triangulation stuff ready.
Oh, Jackie.
He's doing an impression.
Oh.
Because who are you going to call?
Oh, you're right. Yes.
That was the most cringy thing. That I curled up into a little ball.
I remember this as well.
For a little while.
It could have been okay if we hadn't actually heard both of them together finish the quotes. If he had just gone like, oh, because who are you going to call, and then left, and just leave it at that. Shut up, everyone. You don't have to have like both of them in unison going, Ghostbusters, fuck off, both of them.
And then,
100%.
And then doing, are you afraid of no ghosts?
Oh,
like
yeah.
Scooby-Doo.
God damn it.
So, yeah, he could have just been, are you going to call? And Rose could have given it away.
That could have been everyone knows what this is.
And everyone like, that's badass.
Yeah.
But no.
No. I thought you were going to refer to Jackie. Because in that little scene, the second he leaves the TARDIS, Jackie is in the TARDIS with Rose, right? and starts making comments about, like, oh, Rose, you even look like him. You even sound like him.
You love him. You want to kiss him.
But also that she's changed as a person.
And she goes for the whole, like, you'll never come back after I'm gone, and all those sort of things changing too much. And just the whole sort of, you're now a want-away child from your home. And again, that's a nice and complex relationship that she really go into. Like, there's all these wicked... It's a thing that Moffat is always better at, I think, just generally. He's better at the slight complexity of the human endeavour than... Who wrote this?
Russell C. Davis.
There you go. All right. Yeah, and he's just... He's more in your face with...
Dick slaps.
Yeah.
I did like that they at least touched on it. I did like that scene.
Yeah, yeah.
What, the fact that Jackie talks to... Is that the scene that you're referring to?
Yeah, yeah. And it got me thinking about any girl moving away from home to another country, even. Would she be the same girl after 50 years? It's a shame that it wasn't picked up later on.
Hmm.
It could have been interesting.
Hang on. Wait. Did we say this? The way this episode starts is Rose saying, "This is the day that I die."
Yeah.
Did we say this? I don't think we said that.
This is a story of how I died.
Right. I don't think we said that.
I got that in with my horrible monologue.
Oh,
I see.
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Sorry about that.
So, yeah, triangulation station. Nick, go.
Well, so he sets up these to torture one of these things that he doesn't know what it is. He's like, oh, you don't like that. But he hasn't yet established, or at least to us as an audience, that these things are evil. So
he just wants to defraud it.
Well, yeah, and that's fine, but what if, again, from an objective observer who he hasn't made privy that he knows that these are Cybermen, because actually later on it sounds like he does know from, like, day one.
I don't think he knows.
Well, that's the quote, that a boot isn't a footprint, or a footprint.
Yeah, but I think that
doesn't look like a boot.
Yeah, but I don't think that means, oh, I know they're Cybermen. They are not what they appear to be.
Much later in the episode, when Jackie says, what are they? When it's like, don't you ever listen? I said a footprint doesn't look like a boot. And that's when the reveal of the Cybermen. So it's like he's known the entire time.
I disagree. True. You agree with him. I disagree.
I only agree insofar as he thinks it's something that the Earth should be taking as a much more serious threat.
Yeah, well, that's fine. Agreed.
But
yes.
See, so at the time of the triangulation, to me, even watching it back as well, not even just first time, I'm just like, it just seems like you're torturing a thing that you don't know about.
Yeah.
It just sounded, it just looked like you've caged a thing. You're like, oh, you don't like that. It's like, that's weird. Why have you done this? Explain to us why you're torturing this fucking thing. Or we're just going to think you're a terrible man.
I don't know if he's actually trying to torture it deliberately.
No,
I think it's just like, oh, wait, hold on. You're trying to escape. That means you have an ulterior motive and I've clearly trapped you. I've hampered your plans.
Yeah, but it also was a bit more like laboratory.
It wasn't like, I'm going to turn this up to 11 because that hurts more.
No, but it's like a laboratory mice thing. Like, you're a captor of mine now. You're like, I'm going to do my test, whatever I need to do on you. But I don't respect you as another thing that might exist.
Yeah.
I kind of disagree.
I think I heard some sort of grunts of pain coming from it. And then it lashes out and the doctor just goes, you didn't get me. You're going to frazzle some more.
I totally do not remember this
at all. He does say you don't like, or he doesn't like that, does he? And it's like, well, if he doesn't, stop fucking doing it. Unless you know what it is. Like, why are you doing this? This weird thing.
Okay, I don't remember this in exact detail, but what I do remember is thinking at the time, like a week ago, whenever it was I watched this, that it wasn't pain so much as trying to wriggle away, like trying to get away from the doctor's identification process.
I mean, whatever it is that any caption, and that's what it was, he sort of set up this cage, this field. Surely it's absolutely the first sort of instinct to leave, right? It's not meaning an ulterior motive. You put me in there, I'm going to try to wriggle out.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want to live in a net.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go somewhere else.
So, I don't know. It struck a chord with me as sort of mad scientist doctor being not quite so ethical. That's how it felt to me.
Sure. Let's press on.
So, allons-y, we might say, through the episode.
Oh, this is, the introduction of yet another catchphrase.
Yeah.
What does he say this
allons-y,
in the future?
Yeah. Allons-y is one of his things, isn't it?
Okay. Yeah, it is.
Henceforth.
Okay. Well, anyway, Torchwood detect that he's there, and they get the CCTV on him, and so they can expect him when he arrives in the tower with the TARDIS.
And this
he follows their signal or whatever, turns up in their warehouse.
And there's incessant clapping.
Three rounds of clapping.
From crazy HR lady and minions.
Yeah.
Yeah, tons of soldiers. If she's there to clap and to actually not keep all the rifles pointed at him, why bring all these rifles in the first place? Why point the rifles at him in the first place?
I think it's that whole smiley but dangerous, like that sort of like, oh yeah, we've ditched your TARDIS, but with a smile on your face. Like,
oh,
if it's angry,
oh, dude,
it's
yeah. Well, that's obviously what it is.
It's the same sort of thing. We're all clapping at you, but we all have guns.
Yeah, but it just seems very redundant to me that they show up, everyone raises their rifles. He comes out, they still have their guns trained on him, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, let's just clap a little bit. Like,
I think it's
what the fuck were you expecting to come out of this talk?
I think
man?
It's probably the facileness of the writing. What would be better if they all had guns and they were clapping, they're like, well, and he sort of, and then they sort of just like, yeah, but we all have guns. And then that would have been a better way to do it rather than point guns and then clap. It'd been clap, then point guns would have been a better exchange.
Clap and just carry guns, if nothing else. Yeah, regardless, yeah. Whatever, they do that. He at first thinks that he's a welcome guest, but it turns out very quickly he is actually a prisoner. And we learn Torchwood are just a bunch of shitbags. Like, their motto is, if it's alien, it's ours, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And we get another TV trope or cinematic trope as well of, like, here's a massive warehouse with random alien stuff. Enter random dude with, like, a weapon. Like, hey, Doc, do you know what this is? It's some sort of plasma rifle. Yes, well identified. Give it back to the guy who's clearly related to the producer of this episode and therefore got a weird cameo.
Yeah, put it back in one of our many boxes.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, but we
it's a shit version of that Indiana Jones ending.
Mm. Yes, but it's also a bit like Q from the James Bond franchise.
Yeah, okay.
Like, here's a bunch of shit that you're gonna, it's gonna be super important later. Like these clamps. Why are we showing you these clamps? Yeah. You're not going to need
exactly.
these fucking clamps, but let's go need these clamps
definitely
for a minute.
Going to take part in this episode.
In the next episode,
the next episode, yeah, in this serial.
But why?
And I'm assuming the plasma rifle. I mean, I haven't rewatched it, but I'm kind of assuming.
Particle gun,
sorry.
I can't remember the part.
Because it was so gratuitous.
I very much.
Look at this thing.
I really remember the clamps, though, because they have been taken.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it's like, it's some exposition. Absolutely. So, yeah, that was sort of pointless and ham-fisted.
I feel like I need to give a special mention for Jackie's last good scene in this episode, which is just the Doctor bringing her out of the TARDIS and saying, yeah, this is my companion. And then there are some fun bants about how old she is and how Franklin and Rose she is.
Do you know what pisses me off about that? So how old she is, and then later on it's like, oh, you know, I've got a reputation to uphold. It's like, is your reputation?
Then he travels around space and time and shags young birds, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's
for
clearly
him,
the reputation.
For him, surely, what's the difference between 21 and 57, like proportionally.
Oh, dude, huge difference, right? I mean, if you've traveled around the entire universe and you're a Time Lord, if you're from Gallifrey, you know exactly the right level of human skin tautness. Like, the Doc, I think, is very clearly established as he just travels around the world. If she's above 40, nah, no can do. I'm not sticking my willy in that one.
Yeah, by now he's memorized the age of consent in every country, every planet.
That's what freaks me out. Yeah,
this is Rose Tyler. She's not as tight as she used to be.
But and also the intimation that David Tennant-esque Doctor was just about fucking. She's like, what are you talking about? I wouldn't go around the universe for something like this. Like, but every other Doctor has had companions on a more platonic level.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Also, I mean, he's in love with her daughter. We don't really, like, it hasn't been officially established, but it's pretty clear, right? Like, they love each other. Shouldn't he maybe be a little bit more courteous towards his mother-in-law? By the way, you absolute biatch.
Well, actually, that's a sort of a reflexive trope on lads and their mother-in-laws. It's one of those TV tropes of you've got to have a combative relationship with your mother-in-law. So that's probably what they're...
I would say the stereotype is that there's a bit of animosity towards the in-laws, or the mother-in-law in particular, I suppose, in this case. But it's not normally that you go, hey, I don't find you as vulnerable as your daughter.
British TV is very much that.
Oh, awesome.
So it's like from 60s to
I need to watch
now.
More British TV.
Absolutely. there are lots of good BBC-esque comedy that's about that.
Dudes, sorry to cut you off then. There's like a massive thing that we've completely skipped.
Of course.
The Void Ship.
Oh, yeah, that big round hole in
we
our
totally
podcast.
We totally skipped this.
The Malteser.
Explain this. What
so
is it?
So, I assume that Russell T. Davis had just watched The Sphere with Samuel L. Jackson.
Exactly what sprang to mind.
Yeah.
So a sphere sprang to mind when you saw a sphere?
No, the film Sphere, based on the book by Michael Crichton.
Okay, that's still
starring
an amazing leap.
Sam Jackson, Sharon Stone, Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
I want to say Liev Schreiber.
This isn't the one with LL Cool J in as well, is it?
No. Are you thinking of Deep Blue Sea?
Yeah, I'm thinking of Deep Blue Sea.
Oh, that's shit, man.
So
anyway,
Sphere.
Sphere is awesome.
Stop.
No, Sphere is amazing. It's totally awesome. Whatever. It's like Event Horizon, but underwater.
Absolutely.
It's round. It's brown.
And captivating.
Yeah.
In its sadness.
Because it's not there. It's there, but it takes up. It has no mass. Your brain is completely just curled into a pretzel by when it observes this thing because it shouldn't be there or whatever.
Yeah, at the beginning of the scene, Raj is like, yeah, I've been doing Sudoku again. And at the end, he's a fucking head case. Reaching out his hand and sort of almost getting an electric shock, and there's sort of psycho music going, no! And he's having a breakdown.
Yeah. What does it go like? What does it sound like?
Yeah.
Excellent.
So there's this big round thing. No one knows what it is and what it's doing.
But it appeared... I think we learned that. Or maybe it's later in the show, sorry. But, like, it appeared along with the ghosts.
The ghosts are a byproduct of Voyager.
That's what it is. You're right. Take it away.
So we learn that the Voyager exists. People are looking at it, or not looking at it, as it were, and trying to figure something out. And then they've got the ghosts.
Do you know what actually bothers me about that? It's like, yeah, these ghosts came through. It's like, why do you keep doing it? Is that ever established?
Not really. Yeah, like they want to use power that, from this other dimension.
But they say that dimension exists, but it never says the correlation between these ghost shifts they do.
Yeah.
Or whatever they're called. Surely to them it must be like, oh, they're not completely through to our dimension, but when we manage to penetrate the border between dimensions and we can tap Sampath energy, that's when they're actually going to come through. Like, no one actually thinks about the consequences of, well, who the fuck are these people?
I think Torchwood's idea is, these people love the ghost. So we'll just have the ghosts walking around full time. We'll have an infinite supply of energy and nothing will go wrong. Right?
But do you think Torchwood believes that they're always going to be quote-unquote ghosts? Or do you think Torchwood realizes that when they've completed their experiments properly, like when they've actually managed to get that energy from
the
outside?
I think we're taking too many conceptual leaps on behalf of these shitty writers. I think that there's just, like, we're a ghost ship and then at some point we want to harness energy and those things are, like, separate fucking endeavors.
They just want to break the OPEC stranglehold end off.
Yeah. And they've even put it in, like, a massive skyscraper, given it this cold-hearted corporate ambience, just because it's all about money and power.
Yeah, but they clap, so it's okay. Actually, the fact that a load of British people were smiling and clapping just made me instantly incredibly suspicious. I don't know if it had that effect on anyone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're not supposed to have emotions.
It's like watching British cheerleaders. I don't understand it. Why are you that fucking happy? Like, it doesn't make sense. Yeah, absolutely. I used to date a girl that was a cheerleader, and I'd go to her thing. I was like, this is stupid. She's like, why do you think it's stupid? So what I like to do is like, because we're British and we don't clap for no reason.
Yeah, what we're happy to do for almost no reason is minute silences. Because we will stand there and be melancholy about almost nothing. Clapping is the exact opposite. So anyway, at some point they take the dock to see the sphere.
Yeah, and the TARDIS has now also been stolen by Torchwood.
Mm. Yes.
We get that shitty scene where Rose opens the TARDIS doors, looks out just as the dock is there, like, in perfect sync, nodding to her. Yeah, I know what's going on.
He would be the only one looking at this.
Oh, no one's going. No one's through. Looking at it. No, absolutely not. Whatever.
So he does some explaining about the void ship. He identifies it as void ship.
Yes, so yeah, he has to let everyone know what it is, and it's a ship that is to pass through this never-ending void between different dimensions.
Yeah, which, and not just that,
is his first and most concrete, I mean, I don't know, because we haven't been through all Classic Q. Stay tuned, listeners. But his first and most, like, concrete endorsement for the multiverse theory. I mean, okay. We've been to a different dimension.
That's what I was going to say. I disagree with that statement. We have a person in this episode who goes from one dimension to the other.
Yeah, the last one we wanted as well.
Actually, no, yeah, I totally take that back, because he did explain his multiverse endorsement.
In that episode? Yeah, it's like, oh, that's totally a thing. There are tons of different dimensions.
Every single one of them. We're never supposed to pass between one and the other.
Exactly. Is there a blimp? Definitely a different dimension. In this one, I've heard talk of other dimensions?
No, it's not. He doesn't talk of other dimensions. He hears talk of the void ship.
Oh, right.
In this one, he's very adamant that there are different dimensions.
But does he not also say something along the lines of, it's impossible to travel from one dimension to the other without... Without one.
He says that, maybe not without one, but that the void ship is sort of designed for the birth. It's hell. This is my point to the mythology. It's what people say, you know, and people were, like, designed it to, and it was just a theory. It was just a theory. I didn't realise it existed. Like, so if it was just a theory, a cheeky little look with your red and blue 3D glasses.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, like, confirms all the theory. I know you're brilliant and stuff, but you took a little while to experiment on this ghost 3 scenes ago. Why have you not done any experiments on this void ship that you thought was purely theoretical?
or in just wiki it.
The worst science.
I actually thought, I mean, taking the inconsistency away from his terrible forgetfulness, I thought that this was actually fairly strong in terms of the scientific explanation in comparison to the rest of the series.
Oh, it is, because at least a multiverse theory is a real thing.
Well, I think the
idea
that... I
don't know about void, but...
Well, yeah, okay, whatever void is, you know, all the dimensions are stacked up against each other. The idea of a void ship is definitely sort of more high-concept sci-fi.
Yeah.
And quite interesting.
Yeah.
It is quite interesting.
Yeah, it is quite interesting. Anyway, I'm happy with that at a point, and then move on, and then
so he now leaves
to look at the Malteser,
yeah,
the floating Malteser. No one's touched it. That's weird, isn't it?
Mm.
Rajesh goes to touch it and doesn't touch it anymore. It's like, does that mean no one's ever fucking touched this thing?
I don't know. Are they trying?
I mean, as a human, as soon as I'm just like, let's put my hand in there.
or possibly because it has no mass, you can't touch it.
So your hand would just keep going up.
Exactly. Like you.
So what was
there's no friction. There's no mass.
Hand, right? Or pulling his hand away.
Oh, maybe because he's weirded out. He tries to touch it, but he's like, oh fuck, that didn't work at all.
You know, I don't think this episode was meant to be reviewed. I think it was meant to be a series of high impact moments that were then never revisited.
Yeah. Leading to a final conclusion that was it. Anyway, so we're off the dock and crazy HR woman, who, what's her name?
HR stooge.
Yvonne.
Nice. Yvonne.
That's a typical HR name, I believe.
Claire.
Oh, Claire's a good one.
He's off to be badass somewhere. And they've gone to do another ghost shift. And the doctor's now explaining why you can't do any more ghost shifts. It's the shattering glass scene.
That's pretty cool, but I mean, it's just crazy vandalism. You could have just explained it.
Yeah. But it was like the Star Trek analogy. It's like, imagine it like a balloon, and if we just, like, fill up the balloon, it'll burst. Well done, Riker, let's do that. It's impossibly complicated quantum physics, atomic physics, or whatever, and it's just like, I'm just going to explain with this cream pie.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But, okay, whatever. I thought maybe it was a little bit too destructive. Doesn't matter. He now plays the part of, I know better. I know you know I know better. I'm going to use...
I actually really like that.
It's a very, very cool scene, because it's like, it's reverse psychology. He's like, no. You do whatever you want. I'm just going to sit back. And then slowly but surely, he's NLP the shit out of them.
I actually always thought...
NLP.
From this particular scene, the doctor can always be more badass like this than the didactic teacher come father, where he's like, you should do this because I say so, rather than just like, whatever.
How often does he do that, though?
As in the whatever...
No, how often does he actually boss people around?
I don't know. Maybe it's just a sense and a feeling I get from... I'd rather beseech our listeners to see if anyone can come up with some poignant didactic doctor things. I think they exist, but I just don't have them to hand. So if you have them, please tweet in.
Yeah, let us know. Add who back when. Or use the contact form on the website that now works. Thanks, GoDaddy.
Oh, yes. Quick apology. That hasn't been working. So if you've sent in mini reviews and stuff and we haven't been reading it out, which we haven't for the last couple of episodes, it's probably because for some reason we thought you dropped off, but you probably hadn't.
Yeah, sorry. That kind of makes sense now. Huge apology. Yeah. It's been fixed now, though.
Absolutely. Please continue to write in. Your mini reviews are much better than our reviews. the highlight of what we get to do.
Yeah, and also adding to this apology or another suggestion, if you've sent in a mini review, we haven't read it out loud, you can still add it as a comment on the respective posts.
Absolutely.
All right, back to the doctor.
Please. So where are we? We found the void ship.
Rose has now left. She's taken the psychic paper and left the TARDIS. Yes.
Well, we've gone for the abortive ghost shift, as it were. And then at this point, did they take over and start to do their own ghost shift?
There's a little bit of a gap.
Where the Martha recruits another.
Yeah.
And there's a latent conservative bias revealed in Doctor Who here, which is go to the left. Go to the left and see what happens. You'll fucking die.
Right, the politics in that country is really, really subtle. So where are we? I'm slightly lost with the flow.
Rose has left the TARDIS.
Yep.
I think at this point we get Rose doing her spiel. Like, she has her own subplot. She uses some psychic paper, or takes some psychic paper anyway, follows some scientist, and also now finds the void ship.
Yeah.
So we haven't started the next ghost ship yet. She goes there. She's mesmerized by the ghost ship. We find out everyone in Torchwood is impervious to psychic paper.
Which is full bullshit, but carry on.
Yeah, it's kind of... But all right, I'm okay with it. To be honest, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But...
What do you think psychic training consists of?
That's what's bullshit.
Yeah! I don't know.
Okay.
Ask yourself if the King of Belgium would be climbing a giant antenna randomly in North London.
Great callback. That's my callback.
Well, since we don't really know how the... I mean, okay, because Doctor Who as a show hasn't fully established what psychic paper is or how it works. In fact, we've discussed that on Who Back When before, that, like, it works however currently suits the plot.
Yeah, or not as the case
may be. Exactly. For that reason, it may very well be something that you can
so
train
they may
yourself
as well
against.
Have both, like, I have this plot device. I react appropriately.
So what is advanced?
Yeah. But my point is, it's no different to any other appearance of psychic paper in terms of realism.
So it's internally, consistent with how...
In that it is completely inconsistent.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So Rose is now captive of Rajesh Singh. Great.
But he's not the only guy in the room.
Exactly! His assistant, who apparently, like, his name is Bill or whatever, doesn't matter.
Sam.
Sam? Yeah, insert random monosyllabic name here, is, in fact...
Mickey Ricky?
Mickey, in fact.
Well, yeah, we're going to go Mickey Ricky.
Mickey Ricky. Mickey from the Ricky universe.
Yes.
Or the Ricky dimension.
Mickey with Ricky's cojones.
Who's turned up, no explanation necessary. He has gone from one dimension to another.
So badass. You have to now give the full props that are deserved to Mickey and...
Wait for it. Thank God he's in this episode.
Thank God he's in this episode.
He's totally awesome.
Awesome.
Love him right now.
Because there were so many great bits about this, especially, I mean, we'll get onto it later. No, let's get onto it later, in fact, when we come to the appropriate plot point. But him and a cheeky wink is like, yeah, whatever. And you know, good thing's going to happen. He's there. He's there to save the day, even if the Doctor can't, which is awesome.
Yeah, well, the wink moment is, you may be thinking of the same moment, when Rose goes like, it's so nice to see you again. And he's like, yeah, nice to see you too.
Yeah. It's like, fucking bad.
Totally cash.
Yeah,
totally cash. Like, oh, don't worry about it. I've got, like, weird intergalactic, other-dimensional babe stroking my schlong every single day. No, I'm okay with your presence.
I think it's better than that. It's better than that. It's just like, oh, you didn't realise how badass I am. I'm really badass.
I'm also later. Totally over you. I'm also totally over you.
Later. I'll see you later, because I'm busy saving the universe. Maybe...
I also have a crazy plasma rifle.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we'll catch Starbucks. Maybe we won't.
Maybe I'm my own character now.
Yeah, absolutely. Mickey Ricky comes of age.
This is the role reversal of the two.
Yeah.
I mean, in... What episode is it? Oh, the episode...
Fart Girl and Fireplace.
Oh, I was going to say a different one.
Go on.
But also that one, you're right. Yeah. I was thinking of Boomtown. It's a shit episode. Mm. But in Boomtown, where he's actually ploughing Trisha Delaney, decides to cheat on her, go to Cardiff to give Rose her passport. He's all like, oh my God, I haven't seen you in ages. I'm so happy to see you. And Rose is just like, oh, thanks for my passport. Nice to see you too. All of a sudden, role reversal.
Yeah, it's amazing because he's the badass hero. And actually, the reason she's there is serendipitous. He was there already. He was there to hand...
Oh, he has his own agenda. He's I'm totally taking care of this. Screw this nonsense.
What a man, what a man, what a man,
what a
man, man,
what a mighty good man, what a mighty good man now. All right, so...
But they have caught Rose, and so she's put a video link to the Doctor, and he's like,
who? Oh, yeah,
and
sorry.
They call his bluff! And I like that scene as well.
Yeah, that's good, because no one ever calls the bluff, and that's good.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
We'll just shoot the fuck out of her. I'm sure you'll be fine with that, because you were torturing ghosts earlier, so pull up a chair.
All right, fine. He's Rose, and this is her mum.
So now we're going to go into another ghost shift anyway. That's the next plot point.
Yeah.
Despite the Doctor's best... No, actually, sorry. He manages to convince HR Yvonne to not do it, but now the rest of the office is fully cybered.
Okay, so here's...
They're Bluetooth to the hilt.
So annoying. I've got two major points for this. So, three cyber drones or whatever, you know.
Cyber typists.
Martha, not Martha, and the other two. Typing away, making levers go and stuff, and they're like, stop! You stop there! Stop! Stop! It's like, okay, literally 4 seconds ago, you were going to just murder this blonde woman you found. Why not shoot these people? right? Everyone's got guns, right? Everyone's got guns. Shoot these people.
Yeah,
or,
shoot all of them.
Or B, just shove the Dell fucking laptop. Yeah, off I the, think like,
Mickey has already established that in the Doctor Who universe, if you want to stop a supercomputer, you just unplug it.
Why?
Fucking
why,
do that?
Why
man?
Not just like, yeah. It's like, they're typing. How do we get them to stop typing? Move the keyboard like 6 inches to the left, and then
it's just like, what are you gonna do? Yeah. Unplug the keyboard. That's actually it. It's you're a USB away from saving the world.
Or you could have an emergency override, giant fucking unnecessary lever.
We're all scientists. Let's grab a lever. Just like brawn isn't why you got into this business. Like, maybe just unplug the shit. Anyhow, so that happens. That's the first annoying bit. And then the second annoying bit is the emergence of my least favourite catchphrase ever.
Which is?
When the
we should stand by this. Yes, we absolutely should stand by this. When the Doctor approaches...
Oh, he kills not Martha.
Or not doesn't kill because they were dead a long time ago.
Oh, no, apologies.
Yeah. Yeah. Technically.
Apologies.
So apologies.
I've seen this before. Sorry, I'm so sorry.
Fuck you, writers of Doctor! This is the worst catchphrase!
I know one of our listeners right now, Nick, hello, thank you for listening, different Nick, absolutely disagrees with our fervent disagreements with that catchphrase. I'm sure a lot of fans disagree with us.
Why?
Okay, it is a fair point to say, it's a catchphrase just like any catchphrase, but...
I need you to write in. I don't understand what the...
And make it in English, not Finnish.
So pointless as an idea. Like, you can express a whole spectrum of sad feelings without having to use the... Sorry. I'm so sorry.
But this is not... No, but this is the emo Doctor.
Oh.
Yeah. It's not like, okay, he has his Alonzi. Is it Smith who has the Geronimo?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. It's the emo one. It's not the... Embrace life! Let's jump around! It's just like, I'm gonna write some terrible poetry and, you know, commiserate.
Damn nonsense as well.
But you know what makes it doubly pointless in this episode is that he says they died a long time ago.
So who are you saying sorry to?
Yeah, he's just saying it to a cyber shell with an earpiece in. If he was really sorry, maybe he would not kill them.
Yeah, it's nonsense. It was just having to shoot on that, I'm compassionate, but you're not.
Also, he's using his sonic to disable them, right? Can he not use his sonic to disable the machinery that they are trying to operate?
He hasn't got time for that right now, Leon.
I know why.
Oh, why is that?
Because shut up, that's why.
Oh, you know what? As a catchphrase, I totally hate that. Whatever. All right, so they cannot stop the Bluetoothed typists. Ghosts start appearing everywhere.
They do stop the typists. They do.
Oh, you're right. They run away. All of a sudden, cybers actually turn off.
Then they go in search of the signal. There's a signal that's transmitting to them, so the sonic suit driver leads them to the tarpauling marquee.
Bingo. We've got lots of cybers in now. They are using actual brawn to push the lever, I think.
Absolutely. Reason why they were so clandestine about this. The human race was not ready for not one of your side men, let alone 5, 10, 15. Why not have just done that 6 hours earlier?
Yeah, absolutely true. Mm. Completely true. Exactly. Wait, hang on. You just opened my eyes to this. What a complete shit turn of events. Just have the one cyber who's already come through. In fact, there are several cybers, right?
Several.
You don't even need several. You just need the one.
Up
and just fucking pull the lever and problem solved. All of a sudden, you've got every cyber in the world.
I don't know. They've got a...
God damn it, Nick. You've ruined it even more for me.
They've got a particle gun. They've got a nipple clamp. They've got all sorts of crazy shit in that building.
Okay, whatever. Anyway, at the same time in Roger's love shack, the sphere is now actually
doing stuff,
gaining mass.
And no one knows because they're all busy fighting Cybermen. Or not fighting Cybermen, being subdued as Cybermen.
Yeah. And Mickey is there, or Mickey Ricky is there, trains his plasma rifle thingy at the sphere.
More badass.
And completely assumes that, well, I'm assuming anyway, that the head cyber is in there.
So what he says is King Cyberman, you know.
Yeah, Emperor Cyberman, whatever,
I'm there, I'm ready.
Whatever it is, it's
no match for Mickey.
Basically, that's the point, yeah. It's going to be sorry it ever came to our dimension.
Which actually is a wicked setup point.
totally awesome. I'm completely on board with that. One thing leads to another. Cybers have taken over the world. The sphere opens. What comes out of the sphere?
Well, surely cyber.
Well, actually, real quick, let's not skip over this point too much, because it's the ghosts that have turned into cybers, and then the world is like, oh
my granddad's a ghost.
And we also get the whole, someone on the news goes like, oh, actually, you know what? They're killer robots. Everyone go into your homes. Cut to someone in their home.
Yeah.
Cybers go in and kill everyone.
I love that. And they start running up the stairs. There's some man up there as well.
Oh, crap. Everyone's boned.
That's some brutal shit.
Brutal, actually. When I watched that back, brutal as shit.
Massacre.
Yeah, okay. Moving on, sorry.
Yeah. Anyway, sphere opens, out plops, not a cyber, but two or three Daleks.
Which, at the time, is a fucking twist, isn't it?
That's the two major enemies.
Absolutely. One and two. Number one and two.
Yeah.
I think probably when I watched this first off,
super excited. I'm just like, this is it. It's going to be a smackdown. It's either the smackdown for the human race or the smackdown between the Daleks and Cybermen, which will come to volition in the second episode.
Also, is this the first time, not in all of Who, but it is the first time in New Who that we have more than one alien in an episode? As in, more than one
antagonist alien.
Exactly, like one major foe. And I wouldn't count something like, now I'm thinking of Classic Who.
Maybe, very possibly, but there's certainly never been two emblematic races of foe.
Definitely
where there's like
I wouldn't count Raxacoricofallopatorians and the Space Pig.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that
absolutely
doesn't count.
There's not been two, what I would tie, like top five, top ten enemies together.
And I'm not sure that's ever.
Yeah, and now, where are we going with this? Are they collaborating? Are they now going to, pincer movement all across our faces? Like, what's happening?
Yeah,
the stage is set for an
epic smackdown.
Yeah.
Those were exactly the fucking words I was going to use.
That is crazy.
Holy shit. Well, that's what it is.
Dun dun dun. Episode done.
Yeah, then we were on tenterhooks. And at the time, very much at the time, I was super excited.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. As was I.
Yeah.
Rose is going to die. There's Daleks, there's Cybermen. It's all kicking off.
Yeah. Stuff is happening. And Jackie's there. Even though we've kind of forgotten about her in the past 15 minutes of the actual episode. As in, the episode has forgotten about her
absolutely
for 15 minutes.
I'll never forget about Jackie.
No, Jackie's always in our hearts. Anyway, let's rate the shit out of this.
Reviews.
I'll go first. I thought this one was a significant step up from the last two. Obviously. I thought it was good. The pace zipped along. There was very little flab and downtime for the Doctor to get really annoying, because they were spending all the time looking at people typing, because that's terrifying, fucking hell. And people's faces close up. There were annoying things like the close-ups and the IM chat that didn't end. And yeah, most of the scientists grappling with that stiff pole for most of the episode, one way or the other. That was also fairly ridiculous. But there were lots of ideas. I mean, we couldn't go into them all, like Nick said, and so that's a shame. But the fact that they were there was a positive for me. They held together fairly well. There was a great twist at the end.
Yep.
It does set up this epic smackdown. And I liked Jackie's work in this episode. I haven't seen all of these new Who's up till now, but I'm really warming to Jackie. And so I'm going to give this a 3.6.
Ooh. Okay. Echoing most of your sentiments, we also have the return of Mickey. Mickey is a different character in this than he has been to date. He's the character that I think possibly he was intended to be before, but that the writing just failed to portray him as. All of a sudden, he is this, even in prior episodes where he's clearly over Rose, he's never been completely autonomous. He's not been like this individual, this independent man. Now he's his own player. He's pretty cool. Jackie is hilarious. I love the banter between Doc and Jackie in particular, like that weird anti-sexual tension between them.
Yeah.
It's super sexist. I don't give a shit. It's hilarious. Like the corporate environment of Torchwood, but also from a sci-fi point of view, the dimensional shift I can live without, but the void ship is fantastic. Possibly the most interesting thing that we've seen in New Who, at least in this season of New Who. Something that has no mass, something that is there but you can't quite wrap your brain around it, something that has been constructed to not have any matter so that they can travel through an area that has no matter, that can further opens doors for interesting plot lines further down the line. Super interesting. And obviously Cybers and Daleks. I'm giving this a 4.0.
Wow. And the Doctor NLPs.
Yeah. I'm discounting this, like, that one full point I'm only deducting because of really, really shit plotting. But what this episode doesn't have in plot and logic, it makes up for in great ambience.
They're stepping on my toes here because you're both just roundly wrong.
All right, fair enough. Go for it.
Roundly.
There are lots. The Mickey point is a big plus for me.
Jackie, big plus.
Jackie's two big pluses.
You leave my Jackie alone.
But just generally, I honestly, watching it back, and I think I'm watching it the first time, I know what everyone's driving at. I know what we're trying to drive towards, which is an epic exit for Rose and a war and these smackdowns and all the things. So we're building off this epicness. Nothing excuses these giant, unfucking fillable plot holes for me. Why did the Cybermen go about these things in this clandestine fashion and then not all of a sudden?
I don't think they are. Oh, you mean in the office?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? No, that's 1.0 worth of crap.
So nonsense. It's such nonsense that it's not something. So usually I'm a person that can.
I'm at the behest of our listeners here, and you can listen back to our other reviews and see if I'm internally consistent here. But I don't think that I'm not a person that can't suspend disbelief.
We can suspend disbelief, but that's fucking stupid. That's just like crazy stupid. Sure. I cannot deal with the fact that that's so. Like, why have you. What was gained from your clandestine endeavours at this point until now? Nothing.
No one needs that much plastic sheeting.
Absolutely not. Why do you all need to be in dormant? Like, what are you waiting for? What does need to happen? Why does the doctor need to help? None of it. It was all fucking pointless. And I can't have it. I can't have it. So I'm going for negative marking.
Okay, wow.
We've got negative marking. So those sort of big like plot holes. So the two sort of positive things, I reckon I'm there at the 1.9.
Oh, wow.
Wowee.
That's pretty radical.
Yeah. With the promise of the second episode, all of those things, I think I was just like, none of this needed to actually happen plot-wise. You're just building up for things that you need to be commercially successful. That fucking annoys me.
Can I just make a comment sort of in defense of the shit writing?
Please.
I completely agree with you on the fact that there are Cybermen just lurking in a part of the office that is under construction is stupid, because they could have just finished this before the Doctor even arrived.
Yeah.
Definitely. Absolutely. But the Cybermen and also the Daleks, I feel like the writers or maybe the producers or whatever, they can't quite make up their minds. They want them to be so terrifying that all it takes is one Dalek or one Cyberman, yeah, and that's enough to destroy the entire world. And that's really, like, that's why we as viewers go, holy crap, that's terrifying. But at the same time, they can't have an episode. They cannot craft an episode with just the one Cyberman.
But see, here's the thing. And that's what...
And for that reason, they're, helpless in this...
Let me go for a bit of a callback and a call forward. A callback being that the most terrifying episode of New Who so far...
Dalek?
...was Dalek, with one fucking Dalek.
Yeah.
And that was the thing.
But that's where they established that.
And then call forward to Matt Smith era, and, you know, we'll get to that one.
You have millions of Daleks floating through space.
No, the Cyberman. The one Cyberman in the galaxy, you know, as soon as there's a Cyberman...
Explore.
Absolutely. And so both of those stories seem compelling to me as an idea. And sure. That's terrifying as a race. It makes no fucking sense. It literally makes no sense for this episode to have to have amassed.
But, again, I agree that those are great episodes, but every other Dalek or Cyberman episode is a not just one Dalek or Cyber episode. Every other one is hundreds, if not thousands, if not millions of them. And the threat is, holy shit, I mean, we can deal with one or two, but we couldn't possibly deal with a whole army of them.
Well, the thing with the
I think this is, like, very literally the case of, like, they open this portal and literally marching like an army through this portal come the Cybermen.
And I get that, but I don't understand why the precipitation of those people marching those Cybermen had to be done in such clandestine fashion. Like, why do you need... Like, surely you can just go overpower these people, do it, and they've already created the technology, if that's what you needed them to do.
Mm.
They've done it. Go fucking do it.
Well, maybe Cybermen are very cautious. They're like, I don't want to take an action until my mates show up. Yeah, exactly. If they make a bid for the giant phallic lever and don't get a proper handle on it, then one gets shot and the Earth is ready to repel their advance.
I'm sticking with 1.9. There's nothing...
Can I just point out, listeners, that Nick has rated Love and Monsters higher than this episode. Make of that what you will.
I mean it. Get at me.
I think this episode was missing one of two things that would have convinced you otherwise.
Go on.
And that is either the introduction of some kind of anti-alien weapon in the office.
Yeah.
Right? Something that actually prevents the Cybermen from coming in there.
100%.
Or the introduction of, actually, this portal or this ghost shift, whatever it is, isn't complete yet. And every single time that we're doing this, we're getting closer to that point, and the Cybers don't have the know-how make that shift, so they have to wait for the humans to do it.
Third option would have been better, and that's maybe actually coming to fruition slightly more in the second episode with the Dalek thing, but not to give away any spoilers, but if the mechanism needed to be completed by someone as smart as the Doctor, he didn't know what the mechanism was for, and he came and he helped and he sorted it. And
that's not the case here, though.
No, but that would have been a much more compelling thing. If he'd come and fixed the ghost ship thing, and that's what, like,
that would have been
precipitated the downfall, and that would have been a cool storyline.
Completely agree with you, but within the context of, admittedly, maybe flawed context of the Cybers were already there, they were plotting all this before the Doctor even arrived, right? I mean, there was a Cyberman in the office before the Doctor even showed up to say hi to Jackie. Clearly, they weren't in need of someone
Doctor. If we're doing a rewrite, all we're doing, I think I would have written it to the Cybers, again, needed to sort of entice the Doctor to come here, be here for certain reasons.
And then you have a much more interesting dynamic between the Doctor and the rest of them as well, because he's all smug and like, hey, you got to do what I do. Otherwise, you're all going to be killed.
And then all of a sudden, his knowledge kills everyone. A more compelling reason to why, like, the Cybers might be facilitating the ghost shifts and doing this, like, if we do this a lot, the Doctor will probably turn up and want to intervene, because he loves heartstrings and he loves screwing with people.
Yeah, have they not done that in every other episode ever?
That has happened before, yeah.
It is his weakness, isn't it? It's the compassion for humanity that's his weakness.
Sure, but if that were to have happened, would we not be sitting here around this microphone going, oh god, this happens every single time?
Very possibly, but I think generally then Ryan would have got more points for me. There would have been an imperative for the fucking racy action narrative.
Sure.
So are our 20-minute mini reviews over yet?
Yeah. Thank you so much for listening. Join us in our next episode. If it's a new review, it's most definitely going to be the sequel to this one, the conclusion of this two-parter, namely...
Doomsday!
Whoa. If it's a classic, it's going to be...
Bing bong, that would be the Macro Terror. Bing bong.
Thanks, Future Ponkin.
Hey, what if it's an audiobook?
Oh! I wonder, can we say it? Can we say it in unison?
1, 2, 3.
We're in dawn.
And spoiler alert, I still hate it.
Like a sack of ball bags.
That's a sack of sacks
of balls.
It's meta.
That is meta.
There are many layers.
Why not stalk us on the internet? Let's start with the Droodmeister. Who are you?
I am Drew, at DrewBackWhen.
I am found at DrewBackWhen, because it sounds like WhoBackWhen.
I'm Nicoletti. In no way like ukulele, apparently. It's N-I-K-U-L-E-L-E.
Why, apparently? This is your theory.
I know, it's terrible.
It's quite a lot like ukulele.
It's quite a lot. It sounds like ukulele, but it's not spelled like ukulele. N-I-K-U-L-E-L-E.
And I'm Ponkin. Here's a soundbite of JD singing how you spell that.
P-O-N-K-E-N, Ponkin.
Thanks, JD. Sorry again if you sent in a mini review for this episode and we didn't read it out loud. As we said before, we had some email issues. But what you can do is go to whobackwhen.com. This post, in fact, you may be streaming us right now off this post on WhoBackWhen. Add your mini review as a comment at the bottom of the page. Yeah, we may very well reply to it.
That's an enjoyable way to spend an evening.
Oh, damn right it is.
I find them very edifying. All of them.
They put us to shame.
For the most part. And actually, best part, when they agree with us, I'm really happy with that. Just sort of add or Proctor Hulk like that.
I quite enjoy the ones that radically disagree with us,
actually. Yeah, that's too.
When they're not in the room, that is, Nick.
Actually, S.
Stand at the corner. Yeah, catch you in the next one.
Yeah. Ka-chow.
Ka-chow.
We're back when.
Blammo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of WhoBackWhen. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus WhoBackWhen. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. WhoBackWhen just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's @WhoBackWhen. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Ciao.
Who Back When.